Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to our COVID-19 panel discussion for April 16th. This panel discussion will focus on adjusting your audit plan. While we have folks joining us, if I can remind you all to please place your phone on mute. We can hear folks with background noise, and we want to make sure that all of our panelists are able to be heard clearly, and also this is being recorded. So we want to make sure that everyone is able to hear clearly in the future as well. My name is Chris Horton, and I'm the Secretary for the ALGA Board, and I'm joined today by six distinguished panelists ready to share their thoughts as part of this discussion. We have Ben Thompson, who is the Deputy County Auditor of King County, Washington, Corey Stokes, City Auditor of the City of Austin, Texas, Tina Adams, Deputy City Auditor for the City of Charlotte, North Carolina, Emily Kidd, City Internal Auditor for the City of Reno, Nevada, Mark Maracini, who is a partner with Crow LLP, and Michael Oglinski, who is a Senior Auditor for Johnson County, Kansas. And listening in today are over 350 ALGA members. Thank you very much for registering for this event. Today, our panelists will be focusing on audit planning, audit topics, and areas of focus for audit shops in the wake of the COVID-19 pandemic. Next Thursday, many of these same panelists will come back together for a discussion about adjusting to changes in the audit process. Several of you have sent in questions to me by email already, and you're welcome to keep doing so. Again, please check that your phone is on mute. We're not taking questions audibly, but we do encourage you to ask questions through email. I've gotten many questions, and I cannot guarantee that we'll get to all of the questions, but we will cover the topics that are of widest interest. Finally, as I mentioned earlier, this session is being recorded and will be uploaded to the coronavirus resources page on the ALGA website after the session has ended. So anyone who missed this session will be able to access the information there. Finally, ALGA is not offering NASBA-certified CPE for this session, but you are free to self-certify CPE at your discretion. So let's get started. Our first topic was a question many registrants have, which is, what is the best way to add value at this moment? Some possible ways that were suggested are auditing, especially real-time audits, maybe deploying resources to emergency operations within your locality, performing non-audit services, such as helping an organization identify all the COVID-19 related risks without a formal audit, or possibly something else. We're going to go to each of our panelists in turn and ask them to spend a couple of minutes addressing some of these topics from their perspective, and we'll start with Ben Thompson.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Chris. I just want to start out by kind of burnishing our hipster cred in Seattle. Just, you know, we were into this before a lot of other folks and, you know, before it got to places like Kansas. So I think we have a lot of insight on what we're going to do. In our office, we've really concentrated on, I think, doing what we do best, which is conducting performance audits. That being said, we've really looked at pretty hard the topics that we're currently auditing and especially the ones that we plan to audit in the future, because it feels like to us that talking about things that aren't either directly related or pretty closely related to the current response just isn't going to be relevant or valuable to policymakers right now. So we, for the most part, focused on real-time audits, doing the audits on our audit plan as well. We have not been pulled into providing resources for emergency operations, because I think we have a pretty good function for that in King County. And we've also been thinking about and looking at some non-audit services, providing support for task forces and other things, and being subject matter experts on the things that we know a lot about as auditors.
Okay, cool.
Should I say over?
Excellent.
You can say that, but we'll go with Corey next.
All right. This is Corey in Austin, and I think I really appreciate the way Ben phrased that. I think that we need, as a profession, we need to stay focused on the things we do best. I think there are a lot of staff in the city that can help out with emergency response. There aren't as many people who are so capable in terms of assembling best practices or reviewing transactions to identify anomalies. I think those are the things. If I do think we have to change track. I think a lot of our current audits either are no longer relevant, or maybe, as Ben said, policymakers are going to be like, why are you telling us this now in the middle of a crisis? I think we still need to, some of those still need to be wrapped up and presented, but a lot of our work, I think, can pause in order for us to focus on some things that are more relevant. How well is our emergency operations center doing? But if we get in the middle of response, then we kind of end up in a place where we can't really add the outside perspective that I think we're well known for. Over and out.
Thanks, Corey.
For Ben.
Thanks, Corey. Tina.
Hi, everyone. This is Tina in the city of Charlotte, North Carolina. Regarding our audit, similar to what Corey said, we're trying to stay in our lane, so to speak. We are continuing to complete our FY20 audit that we'd had planned, but we are definitely prioritizing those that we think would be most helpful to departments and trying to get those remaining reports issued. We're thinking ahead as we start planning for our next audits and thinking about COSO-related control reviews. IT has always been at the top of our risk assessment, and so that will continue. Regarding deploying resources for emergency operations, I don't know if we raised our hand or everyone took a step back, but somehow we became the liaison between a contractor that was hired to help us wade through FEMA regulations and the CARES Act. There are a lot of funding streams out there in addition to those, and so we wanted to make sure that we availed ourselves of every pot of money that's available. And so there's a contractor that's done this as it relates to storms, but they are very adept at wading through policies and regulations and pulling out that information that jurisdictions need in order to seek reimbursement. And so we're relying on them to do that, but we're acting as a liaison for them. As far as COVID, identifying COVID-related risks, we're definitely keeping our eyes and ears open for issues that have cropped up in other jurisdictions. We've noted an uptick in procurement fraud as well as hacking incidents. And so we're having conversations with those departments that are responsible for those functions just to make sure that they're aware and helping them think through any necessary mitigating controls.
Okay, Emily.
Hi there. Thank you, Chris. This is Emily Kidd. I'm in Reno, Nevada. I think just kind of to kick this off, we all have a different perspective, and I think it's very much tied to what Ben has said. We're all in a different physical place, so this is hitting us at different times, and that when we are and where we are is affecting how we're reacting to this. I don't know if anyone lives in New York City that's on this call, but I can't imagine it being the same for all of us where we are and when we are as this thing comes through our community. What we've been doing over here is I've been fortunate enough to have a seat at the table with management, and I'm trying to help them understand that we can front load this thing in terms of supporting documentation for those FEMA regulations. I understand they're very strict in what they will and will not allow and the way that the documentation is presented. Do they want to hear this at this time? No, they are doing their thing, right? But as Corey said, we do need to stay in our lane to a certain extent, if possible, and just kind of front-loading the requirements that are going to come on the back end of that. That's kind of what I've been focused on. The fraud, waste, and abuse that's coming out of this is of great concern. Procurement fraud, I'm concerned about vendor fraud, you know, all the wires that come in and out of our jurisdiction, any changes that are happening during this time, of course, cybersecurity, they're all kind of rolled in together. So that's kind of what I've been focused on, trying to express my concerns to management at the front who are not chasing documentation later.
Thanks, Emily. Mark, what were your thoughts?
Thank you, Chris. This is Mark Marasini with Crow LLP. And just I might have a little bit of a unique perspective than some of the other members on the committee or on the panel. So I work for a public accounting firm, so I may not have the deep, deep expertise into a specific organization, but hopefully I can provide some insight from what we're experiencing with our clients across the country, going through this pandemic and experiencing it all, through different timelines. So, we have some clients in California, New York, and Florida who all are kind of experiencing in this different timelines and different bell curves. So related to this question specifically, what we've been noticing is the key items right now have really been more real-time auditing and looking at risks related to COVID. And there's been most of our clients have either had at least weekly meetings to discuss risks and action plans, and many of the CAEs have been part of those meetings. And I think internal audit really helps within those meetings because we truly understand how to assess risk, truly understand how to look at risks holistically across the organization, and, really can provide that insight to look at risks from multiple aspects and how it may or may not impact the organization, as opposed to many other members of management might tend to look at, risks for their, their department, their silo, or, their perspective. So I think that brings a lot of value. But in conjunction with that, what we're also seeing is that a lot of times these risks, as they're being identified, internal audit is being pulled in to do what I would call real-time audits, but maybe not a full scope audit, a lot more of validation-type services. So, for example, many clients are looking at cash flow analyses, revenue projections, and are pulling in internal auditors to validate some of the numbers, validate some of the assumptions that are being used in these to make sure that they're providing the best information for everyone to use. One of the other things we're noting is pulling them in for looking at how transfers are being made. Anytime you may be dealing with a fundage shortage or a funding shortage, you might have to transfer money back and forth between different funds. And internal audit is key in this to look and make sure that there's no violations of restrictions or improper transfers being made between funds to cover operations. So I would say those two would be the biggest areas that we have seen internal audit play a key role at this time.
Thanks very much, Mark. Michael, I know that you've been thinking a lot about this. What thoughts do you have about the role that we can be playing at this moment?
Well, so this is Mike Iglinski. I'm in Johnson County, Kansas. What I was going to suggest, Chris, is that we go on to the next question. I have nothing to add to the first question that hasn't already been said.
Okay. Well, I appreciate that. And the next question really has to do with something that many, many folks are interested in. A lot of people have already emailed me about this, and that is think about specific audit topics. And, we've heard about the idea of staying in our lane, of really focusing on what we do best, which is doing the audits. And so really, what are you looking at right now? So I'd like to hear from the panelists. We'll start with Michael on this one, what we're looking at right now for the near term that would be responsive to this crisis.
All right. So a very quick bit of background. Ben kind of alluded to this when he spoke. Going back a little more than a month ago, I got in touch with Ben at King County to ask, what's going on, because I recognized being in the center of the country, we were a few weeks behind, and we could watch that. And over time, I've talked to a number of different shops, so I've kind of got a picture of what a number of different people are doing. This is not necessarily what Johnson County is doing. But I saw kind of three themes in terms of the kinds of work. People are doing work that I would characterize as directly addressing how the organization is responding to the pandemic. A lot of that is, for example, looking in emergency purchases, and thinking about federal reimbursement and other reimbursement. I know some folks are doing, I guess I'd call them non-audit services, providing some advice. The example I recall was there was a local program to help businesses through the pandemic, and the audit office was identifying metrics to help score applicants. So that's one kind of theme that is a direct response. Another is really working on identifying risks or auditing risks that come up through the pandemic. And an example of that would be something like looking at some of the cybersecurity risks associated with so many remote workers. One really interesting idea I'd heard, I thought was interesting, is looking a lot at the organization's practices to protect the safety of their employees. So we have places where we have fire departments and paramedics and police, and we also have office workers, and we may have people providing all kinds of different services that have really different needs for protecting employee health. And then the last sort of theme I saw were more sort of looking back at how the city had prepared, or how the city or county or school district had prepared to respond, and looking at evaluating that. I've seen some pretty interesting work that I think is somewhat related, not done by auditors, but trying to evaluate how the organization is communicating by, like, surveying employees. So those are kind of three themes that I saw. And that's
okay
for now.
Thanks very much, Mike. Mark, you had started talking a little bit about some of these validation, some of this validation work. Do you have a sense that people are doing this work as audits or as non-audit services or sort of a hybrid approach? What are you seeing there?
Yeah, so related to that specifically, I wouldn't call it a full audit, but I also would say they're still maintaining their independence in what we're seeing. So management is still developing the projections, developing the cash flows, utilizing their systems, management's tools to make these assumptions and projections. But internal auditors would come in and just provide some limited assurance around the information that's being used within these. So, making sure it ties out to the accounting system, and validating the numbers, in the best way that they can. So I would say it wouldn't really be playing a management function, more still maintaining the independence, but not really a full-blown audit per se.
Okay. And were there other audit topics that you're seeing you didn't get a chance to mention in the first round?
A couple, and just to build on a little bit what Michael was talking about, one of the biggest areas that we are seeing adjustments being made to audit plans is around cybersecurity. And, there's a whole new set of risks now that have come into play. Many organizations were not prepared to have their entire or the majority of their workforce become mobile. So they're dealing with, several new risks, such as, increased attack surfaces for a lot more mobile device usage, potentially. Another thing is we've noticed that, due to organizations not being fully prepared for this, the deployments, of course, had to be very quick and did not always have, potentially the security around the deployment to limit the ability for attacks. So a lot of controls that would have been normally implemented when you deploy this type of mobility were not able to be deployed because of the expediency in which it needed to be done. The other area is now many people are relying on their home networks, and that could have different exposures than when people are sitting in an office or sitting in a facility utilizing their company's network. So, those are just some examples of the risks that we're seeing. But this is the biggest area that we've seen adjustments to audit plans for internal auditors to come in and do a real-time audit of this IT area and look at these risks and determine what risks they have and how they're mitigating them around this.
Yeah, thanks very much, Mark. Emily, I know you got a chance to start a little bit talking about some audit topics. You know, I mentioned your concern about, you know, procurement and things of that nature. Did you want to add anything to this in terms of some specific audit topics that you're thinking about right now?
Not directly, no. I'm in a 30-day, 30-day into this. What I'm looking at right now is coordinating with other audit leaders in my community and at the state level so we can get a complementary and coordinated approach to the pass-through funds from FEMA. My jurisdiction, my city, is not large enough to get the First CARES Act funding, so I'm just looking at that and trying to understand the methodology of what they're going to want on the back end of this, but really just coordinating with audit leaders in my area is what I would add to this one.
Okay. Okay. Tina, what would you like to add to the audit topics issue?
Really just to piggyback a little bit on what Emily spoke of regarding FEMA and CARES Act funding, we are working directly with departments, like I said, as a liaison between them and a contractor who's going to be accumulating all of that information for us so that we can report up to FEMA and seek reimbursement. The one thing that we are hearing is that the rules and regulations around FEMA allowable expenses are changing, and things that may not have been eligible for reimbursement, say for a hurricane assistance situation, may be reimbursable for the pandemic. And so we are advising our departments to not even go through an eligibility process if they are spending funds in any way related to COVID-19. They are to track it, and they are to maintain the supporting documentation. And we've made sure that our accounting, our finance department, has set up specific project codes that will allow them to track that, and they can upload their supporting documentation to a document management system that we already had in place. And we'll weed out on the back end whether or not it's eligible. But it's a lot easier for people to accumulate that information now versus trying to go back and find it. And so we are really, really working with them almost on a daily basis to make sure and reminding them that you are to be tracking these expenses, you are to be maintaining the supporting documentation, and don't worry about whether or not it's going to be reimbursed. We'll figure that out later.
Okay, that's really helpful. Corey, what are you looking at right now in terms of really specific audit topics?
So for us, I think a couple of things. One, we haven't identified exactly like what our new audits should be, but we know that there are some audits that don't make sense right now. Talked about that previously. We also, some of our audits, like right now we're in the middle of an audit of our 311 system, and so we've kind of expanded that audit to make sure we're including this time period. So they've had the largest or a huge increase in calls to 311 specifically to ask questions about COVID, how do I get tested, or how do I know if I'm sick, hook me up with a health professional, all sorts of kind of inquiries are coming in through the system. And so we did expand that audit to kind of pick up on that and pick up on how they handle emergency situations or just a huge influx of calls. And so for existing audits, we're trying to review, is there something we could do that would be helpful, kind of that would take this pandemic into account, or does this audit not matter at all? And so right now we're doing that evaluation. I hope soon that we'll expand that. Another thing we've talked about a little bit and I've offered up to our city management is looking at some best practices. So we just approved $50 million of direct funding for nonprofits to help people affected by COVID-19, no matter how they're affected. And so looking at how other cities have deployed those programs, how they have put some safeguards in place so it's not 100% free money, but there are some kind of checks in terms of income or other things. And so that's kind of what we're thinking about and looking into, but nothing certain at this point.
All right, thanks, Corey. And of course, you guys were on the leading edge there in Washington State. And I noticed on your website that you've got a couple of audits that appear to be underway. Is that correct?
Yeah, this is Ben. We have a couple of things going on, and I'd like to kind of put a plug for ALGA's COVID-19 resources page, and you can find that. There's a link on the homepage, but under the COVID-19 audit topics section, we have a list of pandemic response audit ideas. Basically, we started a kind of broad audit at the beginning of this response to look at some of the, gather some audit ideas, put a team together so we could kind of think more deliberately about what we would need to do and what would be useful to do. So the audit idea list that we generated is on the ALGA resource page. Just in terms of to add to what a lot of the other folks have said, one of the things I'm really concerned about right now is balancing, not bothering people who are doing the direct response kind of in a first do no harm type mindset, but then also being able to kind of, to what Tina said, gather the information that needs to be gathered right now so that maybe when people's hair isn't so on fire, we can go back and do some good audits and evaluations as to how the response has gone. So kind of balancing those two while still adding value has been at the forefront of our minds.
Okay, thanks very much, Ben. One of the things that came out as a pretty large theme in the questions that have been submitted so far, just in general discussions around this topic, are how we're adjusting, right? And we've talked about this a little bit already, how we're trying to adjust, but at the same time still continue to do the work that we're doing. And so I'd like for our panelists to think, talk about, they've already been thinking about, how we're changing the following things. One, immediate audit activities. I know we've talked about that. Two, audit plans. And three, communication strategies. So this would be communication strategies about, for example, how we're communicating with our audit committees, boards, management, things of that nature, and whether we're changing things. Are we putting out audits in a different way? Are we, issuing press releases, for example? So, and another question that came in that really is kind of putting a fine point on this is whether people are even able to adjust their audit plans easily. If they're approved by a county council or a county board, can you adjust it easily? And if not, what steps might you be taking there? So don't worry, folks who are listening in, I provided all of that information ahead of time to Ben, who's going to kick us off.
Great. Yeah, thanks, Chris. I'd like to kind of answer the second part first, if I can, the adjusting our audit plans. Our audit plan, we have a two-year audit work program, and it's approved by our county council, and we're kind of in the second or final year of that work program now. And so at the beginning of this, it became really clear to us that we were not going to conduct some of the audits that were on the list for a variety of reasons and that we wanted to add new pieces of work. We have a pretty clear code requirement for how our plan needs to be approved. And so working with the general counsel for our council, proposed an adjustment to that plan, and it was actually went in front of our county council, who has been meeting remotely since this started, and there was a stay-at-home order. So they consider that plan and pass it on to the committee that's going to look at it. Because that committee is probably not going to meet for another month, from our office's perspective, we feel like we have kind of the top cover we need to adjust our plan. We've, communicated it to the council members. We've gone through the steps. And so now I think we feel pretty comfortable that we can start kicking off the work that we proposed. I think everybody needs to try to follow the rules and all the things that we need to do, but also be flexible and not kind of let those things hamstring you and prevent you from doing the work that you need to do. I think our council knows we need to do, and certainly I think the public would want us to do. And so I think if we meet those thresholds, then I from my perspective at least, that's good enough. In terms of the changing audit activities and audit plans, your first question, I mean, I think we're doing some kind of common sense stuff. We're giving people more time to respond to technical review, understanding that even if they're not directly related to the pandemic response, you know, people are going to be impacted. And, you know, we have an audit looking at cybersecurity right now that's in the technical review process. And the folks we've been dealing with have been really working pretty hard to make sure that with this transition to telework that people are staying safe. And so, you know, we gave them an extra 2 weeks to give their response for another auditee that was in the executive review phase instead of, you know, demanding that they provide a letter and implementation dates for our recommendations as we typically would. I just asked them to provide whether they concur, non-concur, or partially concur with our recommendations so that we can internally move forward with our own report processing, but then I'll give them a little bit more time to craft, you know, their response letter, their action plan, and so on that we normally expect. So I think just being flexible, being understanding, being empathetic with what everybody is going through. You know, I was worried at the beginning of this that some departments or people would kind of use the response as a means to not provide us data, but I really haven't seen that. Over.
Thanks, Ben. Corey, you're going to be up next, and I'd like to see if you can also make sure you talk to the issue of communication strategies, because that seems to be a common theme in some of our questions.
Sure. Is that communication strategies, like, with the governing body, or?
Well, it could be. You know, Ben talked a little bit about, you know, being empathetic and making sure that we adjust our processes as needed, or and so it could be with your clients, could be with management, could be with the board, things of that nature. So really kind of all of the above.
Okay. So first, like Ben, I'm going to go backwards. I think the audit plan and adjusting the audit plan, so we're fortunate somebody some 20 or 30 years ago was basically a genius and wrote a little line into code. So the Audit and Finance Committee, which for us is a subset of our city council, it's a five-member committee, has to approve modifications to our annual audit plan. But there's also a little caveat in there that says that the city auditor, if the city auditor feels like there's work that needs to be done, they can just notify the committee and go do the work. I think that was a provision added, maybe not with COVID in mind, I'm sure, but with things like this where maybe you need a quicker response than what it would take to get the plan modified and in front of the council. So it does have to be approved, but I have a little bit of discretion, and I'm grateful for that. I have notified my audit committee, and this is the communication piece. I've told them, hey, guys, I'm looking at this. I'm talking to other cities. I'm thinking about what we should be doing, what makes the most sense, what audits we should pause. And I'm going to come back to you with an audit plan adjustment at our next meeting, which for us is at the end of May. So I did that in a public meeting yesterday, I think it was. And I think that's kind of a big piece of it right now is if we know we're going to have to change stuff, is making sure people aren't surprised when we get there and we say, hey, by the way, we're not doing these six audits. They hopefully won't be totally out of the blue when that happens. I think the other piece, the communicating with everybody in this setting and certainly internal to the city, it's just so critical, is being able to communicate with your staff, even though we're remote, making sure you have regular updates to them so they know what's going on or at least know what you're thinking about in terms of, for example, modifying the audit plan, communicating outside with, for me, it's department directors, having conversations, particularly in those departments where we're actively auditing or actively backing off of audit, making sure that everybody knows what's going on. I think that I'm going to say over, like Ben.
Thanks, Corey. Tina, just in general, this idea of, you know, how you're making adjustments, and then also can you adjust your audit plan pretty easily, or is there kind of some bureaucratic barriers you have to overcome?
Fortunately, we do not have to have a formal approval of our audit plan. We report administratively to the city manager, and we complete two-year audit plans as well. And so when we initially start our audit planning, we have conversations with the city manager let him review what we've prioritized, have conversations. If there are things he thinks we need to add, we try and work that in. But for the most part, we present our audit plan to him. He says, go forth and audit, and we're able to move on. If we provide periodic status reports on our audit plan, sometimes those can be as frequently as monthly and sometimes quarterly. But what we do is we use that status report to communicate any changes or delays. Say, for instance, you know, we plan to have an audit report or an audit start on one topic, but then we received a request from a department that really needed to be prioritized over the one that we had on the plan. We just indicate that on the status report, and those are submitted to the city manager's office as well. So we really don't have a formalized process that we have to go through for changes, but we definitely document reasons for any changes or delays just so we have a record of where we started and where we ended up.
Okay, thanks, Tina. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to jump. Didn't mean to cut you off, Tina.
No, it's fine. I was just going to say, Ben pretty much said what we are doing as well regarding changes to our audit activities. We're just being really flexible. We were on track to issue 15 audit reports this year. We're thinking it's probably going to be somewhere between 11 and 12. Because we're just having to allow people more time, and there are other things that are being prioritized.
Great. Thank you very much, Tina. Emily, I give you a chance to jump in here.
Yeah, thank you. Fortunately, we have a lot of flexibility. There's not a lot in code as to how we have to do our audit plan, so that's been fortunate in this. And really, for all of us moving forward, I think we do need to open up to the idea of flexibility. I know that we can't work from the same playbook as we were working from last year. Things are changing, and the risk tolerance is changing probably as well. So those are kind of the concerns I have, but adjusting the audit plan for us is simple because we're at the end of our fiscal year and we're just rolling out the last one, which is being worked on remotely. So we're going to start fresh and move forward from there. Over.
Okay. Thanks, Emily. Mark, I know that you talked a little bit about this, but kind of from that 30,000-foot view that you all have, you know, what are you seeing about adjusting plans and you know, if you had any thoughts about communication strategies as well?
Sure. Yeah, so what we've been seeing is related to audit plans and audit activities. I talked a little bit about some of the immediate audit activities that we have seen, and you know, because of this, many of the organizations that we work with are pushing back their audit plan, so just delaying the timeline of their audit plan, you know, through the year and then into the next year. So many of the communications, you know, to the board would input these immediate audits that are now needed due to the circumstances and just show the timeline pushed back for the remaining audit plan for some of the other audits that were planned for the year and the following year. So we haven't seen too many cancellations yet, still partly because many of the audits were, you know, deemed higher risk and needed to be in the auditing cycle, but we have seen them being pushed back a bit. Related to some of the communication strategies, both to our clients within the organization, but then also to our internal teams. Noticed a couple things. Many internal audit shops are sending out just a communication letter to help reassure many of the people within the organization that, you know, that the safety and health and well-being of, you know, everyone is internal audit's main concern, and you know, they would be. They would state, you know, what they're currently doing to help the organization, discuss that, you know, some of the non-essential audits, you know, will be, you know, on hold, and that, you know, internal audit will be looking at, you know, some of the areas of the highest risk or highest concern to the organization based on the current circumstances and helping the organization, you know, mitigate those risks
and get through this together. So we've seen a lot of those communications go out to organizations from internal audit, just as another reassurance. Related to internal, to the internal audit teams, speak to this a little bit just from our perspective for our audit team. You know, we've seen a lot of organizations trying to implement more video meetings, you know, in these times, being stuck at home, you know, by yourself, it could be difficult. So we're trying to implement more video meetings just so people could put a face to a voice and you know, communicate with when they're communicating with them. One of the other things we've been doing, and this is not directly related to work even, but just helping people keep their sanity through this, is, you know, every day or a couple days we've been just putting what we call coffee breaks on the schedule and just having our team participate in a Zoom meeting, you know, and just chatting about anything. It doesn't, you know, not even about work, just, you know, chatting about, you know, how things are going and, you know, what's going on in their lives. So trying to stay connected with them, trying to make everyone still feel part of the team. So that's basically everything on that item that I have.
Yeah, that's really interesting, Mark, and I appreciate you bringing in some of the internal team dynamic, and we'll talk about that a little bit later on in this session as well, just kind of caring for folks on our team. But just, Michael, I wanted to give you a chance to talk about some audit plan adjustments and communication strategies from your perspective.
Well, I think that we have done, to some extent, everything or some of what everybody has said so far. One thing that we have also done a little bit is the ongoing audits that we're in process. We've made a few changes, kind of tweaks, to try to make it easier to get them done and hopefully provide just as much value. So looking at the things that were underway and figuring out how can we get this done given the constraints. Communication is, you know, there's never enough, and you always try to do more. We are trying to be very careful not to, you know, interfere with anything that is a emergency kind of public safety issue, but just communicate as much as we can. Keep going. That's it.
Thanks very much, Mike. I really appreciate that. What we're going to do now is kind of do what I've called a lightning round. So we're going to take a number of individual questions that folks have sent in, and we'll give our panelists, you know, 30 to 60 seconds to be able to talk about some of these questions. Some of the, in some cases, the panelists have already said they don't really have anything. So I've already going to be able to skip our panelists who have opted out of those particular questions. But our first question is one that came really from a number of different people. And that has to do with being, you know, adding value to the organization through some kind of emergency operations. We talked about this a little bit in the first topic, but the question here is, are audit shops deploying resources to other parts of the organization? And if so, how are you protecting against future threats to independence from this work? Mark, we'll start with you, and I know that you had talked about this a little bit. Did you have anything you wanted to add in terms of some of the things you'd already mentioned?
So yeah, just one quick thing just related to the independence. So one of the things that we're not seeing a lot of this, but one of the things that we are seeing is that anytime a person needs to be deployed to a specific division and may take on a management function or may take on a management role, we've seen internal audit shops complete just a quick form that would discuss the situation and what was done, including the timing in which they played this role or the period in which they played this role, so that they can ensure that as they're planning their future audit plans for the next year in accordance with the IPPF, that, you know, that person would not be involved in an audit of that area for the next year. So that's what we're seeing related to help track some of that independence and making sure you're not violating any of the standards.
Thanks, Mark. Can I just clarify? Are you saying that they would sit out for the next year, or they're not having to recuse themselves from that audit area for the rest of their career?
Yeah. So, yep, sorry. And just to clarify, so that person, if this person, played a management role they cannot be involved within then the audit of that area for a period of 1 year, correct?
For a period of 1 year. Okay. Thanks very much for that clarification. Emily, what are you seeing in Reno, you know, that might indicate that you might have a situation like is from what this questioner is asking?
Yeah, our audit shop in Reno is just me, and I am not doing management function right now. I have been included in the management and strategic calls. And it's kind of more of a fly on the wall situation. I'm trying not to interject too much because it's really not my place, but I have spoken up several times about some of the risk factors regarding the functions that they're talking about, right? So I say, you know, hey, did you consider this? Hey, when we do this, don't forget about that. And, you know, it's kind of that question they don't want to hear, and it's not important right now to them, but really it's my job to inform them of the risks of their activities. So it's a little concerning, but I'm not actively working in a different place. So I think it'll be fine. Over.
Thanks, Emily. Tina, are you all deploying any of your folks into other parts of the organization to help out with emergency operations?
We are not. We are actually down 3 auditors right now, so we just don't have the resources to deploy. We do have a couple of auditors on our staff, one of whom has been on our staff for 5 years. The other one just came on within the last 6 or 7 months, and she transferred from another department. And so we have already, you know, made sure that she would not be working on any audits related to her former position or even in her former department. And so we're used to having to make sure we identify those threats when we're assessing, you know, work, and just making sure that we institute safeguards so that we don't violate that independence.
Okay. Thanks very much. Corey, what are you seeing in Austin?
So we are, I guess I am avoiding to the best of my ability any deployments that are direct work. There have been calls for volunteers. My staff have asked, can we do this? And I've said at this point, no. I could see us getting to a point where it's more important that we help the community than that we be able to audit it later. But I'm feel fortunate that we're not there now, and I'm going to hold on to that because independence, I mean, it's our bread and butter as auditors. I think it's really important that we be able to do some after action on this stuff and see if it happens again, how can we do it better, kind of bide our time. One other thing that came up, the 1 year thing about independence, that's a red book thing. And so if you're a red book shop or possibly an orange book shop, although I think if you're orange, you have to follow yellow, that 1 year thing works, but I think in the yellow book, it's really more of an assessment of kind of can you objectively evaluate this given your participation. And so I think for yellow book shops, and if you're thinking about future peer reviews, I know some people are, it will come up. I think that there are also absolutely allowances for emergency situations where auditors just need to step in and do some management functions. I'm fortunate we're not doing that in Austin. Over.
Thanks, Corey. And Ben, are you all deploying resources to other parts of the organization in King County?
To a pretty small extent. I mean, we volunteered to kind of help when we talked to our budget director with things that we could do while maintaining independence. And so I'm involved in a weekly call, basically just for information only to understand some of the reimbursement issues, and have volunteered to, you know, try to gather best practices or identify what other organizations are doing, kind of like what Emily was talking about, with the caveat that we documented the participation and kind of the limits of it in an attempt to kind of preserve or indicate how we're going to think about independence moving on. I would just like to, like, encourage people out there, especially those folks who are in management roles, to really think about how they consider their employees wanting to volunteer for stuff. I think this is a situation where a lot of people are feeling a lot of different emotions and things. And I think while we have to, as auditors, maintain independence, I think there's a lot of people who really want to do more direct help as they see the people around them in their community really struggling. And so, you know, if we're going to say no for certain things because of independence, thinking about what are the other things that we as an office or them as individuals could do to contribute to kind of a societal-wide challenge so that they can they don't feel like as auditors they're cut off from some avenues to help that maybe other people in their communities that are open to other people in their communities. So I think it's just it's a difficult balancing act, but I think we should think about it as broadly and holistically as possible. Over.
Thanks very much, Ben. I really appreciate that. And this next question, I don't know if anybody has actually done this, but I'm gonna just throw this out and then just ask someone to jump in if they've actually started this work. There was a question about a shared framework for audit shops to use in evaluating jurisdiction responses to the pandemic. Something that, you know, a lot of different shops could use, maybe have standard criteria we use or specific objectives we all focus on. Has anyone made an effort to start developing this that you all know of?
Is this whoever wants to talk or Ben first?
Whoever wants to talk, either to say no or yes.
I've heard a lot of gathering best practices, but I don't think that's quite the same as identifying criteria and comparing jurisdictions to it. So figuring out how, because every jurisdiction is so different, figuring out how my jurisdiction responded compared to some others is valuable, but I don't know about strict criteria, and I haven't heard anything about that.
Okay. Anybody else have anything that might get close to this?
This is Ben. I mean, one of the things we're thinking about is really just looking at the criteria in continuity of operations, like COOP plans, and our county had a pandemic response plan that they had put together that was more related to, I think, like SARS. But so really kind of comparing what we've been able to do with what we thought we were going to be able to do in things like COOPs and previous plans, I think would be is one of the avenues that we're thinking about.
Okay. At this point, I'm going to jump in ahead to the next question, but let me just put in a plug here for the forum on the ALGA website and encourage folks that, you know, perhaps if there are some things that you are doing in your organization to create a way of evaluating jurisdiction responses to the pandemic, that might be something that we can have a further conversation among folks within that forum. Let me talk about a little bit, or ask you all to talk a little bit about this idea of our IT infrastructure. And certainly many organizations are deeply stressed now in their IT infrastructure because so many people are going to remote work so quickly. Are you seeing any weaknesses in the IT infrastructure that we should be aware of from a risk perspective? And we'll start with Mike on this one.
Yes, we are seeing things like the VPN capacity wasn't really there, that people working remotely are in very different situations. I think we're going to come to a point where we may have a lot of laptops out there that haven't been patched because people aren't connecting directly to our network and maybe the patches aren't getting pushed out. I think there's also a real change in it's not an infrastructure issue, but just people who were used to working next to someone, and if they had a question about something on their computer could just ask for help, are now sitting in their home office, don't have as easy a person to ask for. That's not really an infrastructure problem, but that's certainly a risk. And there's all that sort of cybersecurity problems related to work at home. Over. Oh, I should add, there was also a little bit of people who needed to work at home, who were essential, who didn't have laptops. And, for example, our office gave up a few laptops to help out those folks. Now I can say over.
Okay. Thanks very much, Mike. Mark, I'm going to go to you next, just with a quick note that we are coming up until about 5 minutes until the end of our session. I did have one other question I wanted to get in after we get our panelists a chance to talk about IT infrastructure. So take it away, Mark.
Yep. So I'll be quick. I talked a little bit about this before, and just to build on what Michael was saying, the couple different items just a change in phishing schemes, a lot more phishing schemes centered around the pandemic, either pretending to be a not-for-profit related to helping people with suffering from the pandemic, being the CDC, whoever the case may be. So just additional training around that and making sure people are aware of this for these new types of phishing schemes targeted at this pandemic. The only other thing that I would say is just the caution on emails related to private or sensitive data that previously might have been on a network drive or accessible within an office. Now, looking at ways of distributing that, and unfortunately, I think a lot more people now are falling back on email, which is not the best means of distributing sensitive data. So just being cognizant of that and how they're handling sensitive data and the distribution of that, or those be the only two things to add for me.
Great. Thanks very much, Mark. Emily.
Yeah. We have a very strong IT director, and her team has been issuing all city emails regarding the kind of cybersecurity issues that we've all been concerned about and talking about. So I've kind of laid off of that. I'm a little curious about how the restart is going to work or not work if we have been all working remotely and bring back our devices and plug them in the network. I don't know if that could or could not, what kind of risk would be around that. But those are kind of my thoughts.
Okay. Tina.
I'm sure. The city's been really enhancing its IT capabilities ahead of the Republican National Convention, which is scheduled to be here in August. So we had already instituted a number of improvements around information technology and cyber attacks to prevent cyber attacks. We'd already increased our bandwidth for VPN because we knew a lot of people weren't going to be able to get within the perimeter of where the convention is being held, and that's where a majority of our employees work. And so we've done some work ahead of the RNC around IT, so we're counting ourselves a little fortunate and a little bit ahead of the game than some other people who didn't have that motivation. That being said, our IT director has noted that, hacking activity is higher than ever. We'd already seen attacks. Fortunately, our system detected them and were able to keep them from penetrating our system, but that the number has increased exponentially, and so we are really working with them, and they are really communicating out to departments about making sure, phishing schemes and not clicking on errant links. And they've done those kinds of tests in the past, but they're really sending those out more frequently now. And anytime there's something new that comes out, they communicate that to employees via email. And they also make department heads aware so that they can also reemphasize the importance of that to their employees. Over.
Thanks very much, Tina. Corey.
So I think if people covered pretty much everything I would say. I think key highlights for me, one, I hadn't thought yet about what Emily talked about, so I'm excited about the what happened when we go back and stick our laptops back in our docking stations, so that'll be a fun audit topic. but I think we had some hiccups with VPN the first few days, but those got ironed out. Our IT staff have been really responsive, and then our IT security folks have been sending out the updates like Tina described. Over.
I don't have any. This is Ben. I don't have anything to add on this one, Chris.
Okay. So we're at the top of the hour, but I did have one really, really intriguing question that I wanted to get to. So if folks are able to hang on for a couple of minutes, we'll do this, and maybe if we can just limit your response to 30 seconds if possible. And that is, we'll start with you, Ben. What should internal audit not do right now?
I think, you know, obviously we shouldn't go in and tell people their response is terrible right now. I think there's a lot of people working really hard. I think we should just not criticize those right at this moment who are doing quite a bit, and kind of save that for maybe when they get a good night's sleep.
Corey.
I absolutely agree. I think we need to do our best to stay out of the way. If there are ways we can add value, we should add value, but otherwise we should try not to interfere with operations. Try not to criticize people who are in crisis. Hard for auditors. And then I would say every jurisdiction is different, and so what we should not do, like in some jurisdictions, it does make sense for you to roll up your sleeves and distribute food at the food bank. In other jurisdictions, that's not the best choice or just greatly impacts the things you're going to be able to audit in the future. So I would say it's going to be different for everyone, but I like the idea of not kicking people when they're down. Thank you, Ben. Over.
Thanks, Corey. Tina.
I definitely echo those sentiments exactly. You know, stay in our lane and look for opportunities to add value, and where we see that, do so. But otherwise, stay out of the way and you know, just try to be that support system for those individuals who are, you know, boots on the ground and exhausted. And so we just need to kind of be there to fill in the gaps when we can. And just be that support system. Over.
Thanks, Tina. And Emily?
I think we should let go of the need to be productivity warriors and give ourselves some grace to be human through this. Over.
They're very poetic, Emily. Thank you very much. Mark? Mark may have had to, I don't know if he's on mute or may have had to drop off. So we'll give Mike a
Mark.
Oh, hey, Mark.
Sorry, I didn't hear you call my name. I was waiting patiently. I apologize. So, yeah, just to echo basically what everyone else is saying, you know, I think there will be a time and a place to look at the response plan and provide a good analysis of it and help plan for future response plans for pandemics or whatever emergencies may come. But, you know, that time's probably not now. I would agree that you kind of lay back and just focus on what you could really provide value and actionable items for immediately and not try not to get in the way of people doing the best they can in this time of crisis.
Thanks very much, Mark. And, Mike, we'll let you have the last word from the panelists, and then I'll close this out.
Well, I would completely agree with everything everybody just said. I think don't cause any trouble, but recognize that we can be valuable, and that trust and transparency is important and maybe more important, and just empathize with everybody. Okay, that's it.
Thank you very much, Mike, and thank you to all of our panelists. I really appreciate a very human way to end this, in having some empathy for a lot of people who are doing heroic work in helping keep continuity of operations for critical local government functions. Thank you all who have joined us and stayed with us a little bit past the top of the hour. I do appreciate you. I'm sorry we couldn't get to all the questions, the great questions that were offered both before the session and during the session. I will be able to share the questions with our panelists. And if you want to contact our panelists directly, you're certainly welcome to do so. I think that they would welcome the opportunity to interact with you. I did want to put in a quick plug for a second iteration of this COVID-19 panel, which we will have next Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. And we will be talking at that point in time about adjusting your audit process. So things like remote work and managing remote work, doing remote telework or remote field work, things of that nature. And so you can go ahead and start emailing me your questions or, you know, get your friends registered for that as well. So it'll be another excellent session. Many of our same panelists will be back at that time as well. Again, thank you all very much, and we will talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you.